What is your all-time favorite hymn? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, inviting you to vote for your favorite hymn. Send an email with your vote to hymnvote@issuesetc.org, and during the week of August 9th, we'll study the top five hymns chosen by Issues Etc. listeners. Voting ends July 25th. Vote today for your favorite hymn, hymnvote@issuesetc.org. A hymn for any time of the church year is fine. hymnvote@issuesetc.org.
I've met with leaders from America's religious communities, like Pastor Hybels, people of different faiths and beliefs, some liberal, some conservative, who nonetheless share a sense of urgency.
Again and again, we heard stories about the economic hopelessness that first drew them to this great country, and we heard about their current daily dilemma, living in an almost surreal state of limbo.
Political science professors found that when they looked at all the writings the founders used and relied on and quoted, they found 3,154 quotes. The most quoted source was the Bible. 34% of their quotes came out of the Bible.
One of the problems that evangelicals have is that they think that just quoting miscellaneous passages from the Bible makes a person a Christian. Nonsense!
Well, it's been a busy day for me, and I have not been able to monitor the convention in Houston, Texas, of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod for the better part of this day, only for the last few minutes since I walked in the studio. I was on the road a little bit this morning, and so a lot of this is coming as brand new news to me, and I'm going to learn more, I think, in the next 10 minutes from Molly Ziegler-Hemingway. She joins us again, as she has all week, for a live update from the 64th Regular Convention of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod taking place in Houston, Texas. It is Friday afternoon, July the 16th. I'm Todd Wilkin, and thanks for tuning us in. After our short conversation with Molly, we'll get to our regular Friday fare, which is listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line, Issues Etc. blog of the week. And then in the second hour, we have some unfinished business with Dr. Rod Rosenblatt. We're going to conclude a five-part daily series with him on Christ Alone today, talking about Christ alone and the pastor. What is the kind of Jesus your pastor preaches and teaches to you on a Sunday-by-Sunday basis? We'll answer that question of what it should be in the second hour of the program. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Email us here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet @issuesetc. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a regular guest, columnist for Christianity Today magazine, a contributor to GetReligion.org, and she joins us live from Houston, Texas, and the 64th Regular Convention of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Hi, Molly.
How are you doing?
I understand that there's been some movement one way or the other on a lot of these elections, some names that our listeners would, some names that our listeners would certainly recognize, Pastor Brian Wolf Miller, Pastor Will Whedon, Sandra Ostapowicz, and others are finding themselves at the top of ballots. What's been going on?
It's just an amazing story that's happening here in Houston, and I don't know if people can quite understand how amazing. The official nominations that were put forth by the floor committee were overwhelmingly not in the direction that they're going. So people are winning over and above what the nominating committee had suggested to convention goers. And what you're seeing is what I've been jokingly calling the Issues Etc. revolution. People who have appeared on Issues Etc., they go to the top of the list. You're seeing just an amazing turning over of a new leaf here. People are, this is like a lot of fresh blood that you're seeing being put on these boards.
Let's talk about the restructuring, which has confused all and sundry for the last, at least convention goers for the last 4 or 5 days. And I understand that this morning there's a bit more confusion to deal with. How will you sort all this out for us, Molly?
Okay, well, it is very confusing, and I actually don't think anyone, or maybe only one or two people, fully understand what's going on. We've already talked about how there was the major streamlining that put a lot of authority under the new synodical president, and that's what most people in Synod were really caring about going into this. But there was actually another radical change proposed that would change the way the way congregations had representation at the synodical level. And there was major news out of that today. So there had been a previous resolution that would set the groundwork for making a distinction between what made a circuit, like a visitation circuit where pastors work together, and an electoral circuit where congregations can send representatives to the synodical level. And the floor committee had tried to make some radical alterations there, basically change what made a circuit. And surprisingly, the convention actually made the geographic reason for a circuit be stronger. So the floor committee was trying to basically gerrymander some districts. If you were a group of church growth congregations, you could come up with your own circuit cluster, I think they were calling it. And if you were a group of traditional worshipers, you could have your own circuit cluster too. And a lot of people thought this was a bad idea because they really want these congregations talking to each other at the grassroots level, at the local level. Well, that went down. I mean, basically these resolutions have been amended to take the teeth out of them so that, and in fact, to replace it with this strong geographic designation. And Floor Committee 8 kind of realized they weren't keeping the convention going with them. So they put all their eggs into this one basket, which I think was Resolution 805B, that would eliminate electoral circuits, cut down the number of national convention delegates to about half of what they are now, have national convention delegates elected by districts, and change the criteria of districts as I was mentioning from a geographical basis. Well, someone got up and basically said, you know what, these are a lot of changes. We've already amended some of the previous resolutions. Let's just send this back to committee so that they can clean this up and get it back to us, effectively killing the entire thing. That was a huge victory for those that don't want some of these changes at the circuit level.
No, it's effectively killed because time is running out. Is that true?
Well, I think it's effectively killed because Floor Committee 8 is going to be gone after this election. It was referred back to a newly created Structure and Handbook Committee, but I don't think that there's that general will for these changes at the circuit level that Floor Committee 8 was really trying to shove through.
We spoke earlier many times with Dr. Ken Sherb about the prospect of restructuring. He emphasized over and over again how important that grassroots level changes in structure were going to be if they were passed, and he fairly warned against them. So the upshot of this entire thing sounds like at the national level, at the hierarchy or the bureaucratic level, big changes is the will of the delegates. At the grassroots level, they don't like that.
Yeah, and that's, I should also caution, there were already changes made so that you will now elect your synodical president from district conventions. That was already pushed through in the early days. So that would be an example of one of those changes that decreases the level of grassroots involvement. But overall, this was the big daddy today, and it failed.
What else is going on there?
It's just I can't overstate enough what a change of guard we're seeing, and there are lists put forward by the folks on the left and the folks on the right, and the United List, as it's called on the right, is just taking almost every position. They didn't have a recommendation for the most recent thing that was up for vote, and they lost that one, but they didn't have a recommendation, so they were going to lose that one no matter what. But you're just seeing some of the most confessional people in Synod being put into these onto these boards. It's a really big change in leadership.
In essence, they're populating these two big boards that replace all the many program boards that used to exist. Is that correct?
Right. What they're voting on right now is the board for national mission, and they'll next be voting on the board for international mission. These are actually two advisory boards. The boards that people were voting on previously, which would be for the Concordia University System, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, our publishing arm, those kinds of boards actually have much more teeth. But these boards are very important, too, as President Harrison will have to hit the ground running with an all-new structure.
I notice, and you pointed this out, I think, yesterday when we talked, that one of the big differences is age. It looks like a young group of people.
Yeah, it does definitely seem like a changing of the guard. A lot of the people who were put up on this, what's called the Jesus First list, are in, you know, maybe they're not in the twilight of their life, but they're, you know, from the upper part of the baby boomer generation beyond. And then the folks that are being elected into office are people who, you know, might be of that age too, but they work their way down.
Have you talked to anyone from Jesus First? That's kind of the call it LCMS left political machine. Have you talked to anyone from that group to get their reaction to the convention proceedings so far? About a minute here, Molly.
I have. They were definitely surprised by what happened. I think because they felt that the convention was going their way for the first couple of days, and then when the votes started going in the opposite direction, they were very much taken by surprise. I think there's a little bit of confusion about how to proceed from here on out. But they are also doing their best to work. They're speaking very well of our new president-elect, Matt Harrison, and they are doing their best to work with what is pretty clear, renunciation of their side. They understand what's going on, and they want to be helpful from here on out.
How much? We were just wondering about this kind of offhand before we came on the air. How much do you think the tone set by President-elect Harrison's dais speech after his election? How much of that had a bearing on what happened next and up to this point in the convention?
It is really surprising what a change. I think that probably had something to do with it, and I think that people are really wanting unity, even apart from that. But that definitely spurred them on. You are seeing just much less dissent. You're seeing much more working together. You're seeing wider and wider majorities being elected for the elections and for other issues. And it's just already the convention seems to be coming together. It's kind of an interesting thing to watch.
With only 30 seconds, is there anything big left on the agenda that will be news over the weekend?
Well, there's a little bit of confusion about, the floor committees are kind of changing things as they go, and so I think we might see some more surprises, but we won't actually know until we get today's business for tomorrow. But there's a lot of business that was supposed to be left to be done, but I think the floor committees are getting a sense that maybe they don't want to push through some of the changes that they were going for, and so we'll have to see how things go tomorrow.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a columnist for Christianity Today magazine. She's a contributor to GetReligion.org, and she joined us live from Houston, Texas, where the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is meeting in its 64th regular convention. Molly, thank you.
Thank you.
When we come back to our regular Friday afternoon fare, it's listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. Then we'll pick blog of the week, and then in hour two, the entire hour is devoted to our conclusion on our Christ Alone series with Dr. Rod Rosenblatt. Stay tuned.
Houston is filled with promise. Laredo's a beautiful place. Galveston sings like that song that I love.
What is your all-time favorite hymn? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, inviting you to vote for your favorite hymn. Send an email with your vote to hymnvote@issuesetc.org, and during the week of August 9th, we'll study the top five hymns chosen by Issues Etc. listeners. Voting ends July 25th. Vote today for your favorite hymn, hymnvote@issuesetc.org. A hymn for any time of the church year is fine. hymnvote@issuesetc.org.
The CLCC has produced a new seminar to help people understand the structure of LCMS churches. So many people today are unaware of their church polity. This seminar can be downloaded for free from the CLCC website, www.theclcc.org. This is available for a seminar, a self-study, or presentations. And think about joining us. Members can download the PowerPoint version for free. Visit us today at www.theclcc.org.
Luther had Wartburg. We have Collinsville. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I attended Sunday services in a beautiful Singapore Lutheran congregation. One local man approached me and asked with a pronounced Southeast Asian accent, "You live in St. Louis? You know Todd Wilkin?"
Pastor Matt Harrison reading from his new audiobook, Christ Have Mercy, How to Put Your Faith in Action.
Who? You mean Todd Wilkin? It turned out this man, half a world away, was a regular listener via the internet, and he's hardly alone. It really is a whole new day. We are witnessing the greatest free flow of faithfully Lutheran information in the history of the Lutheran Church. It is the worldwide moment for confessional Lutheranism. It is Missouri's moment.
You can download Christ Have Mercy by Pastor Matt Harrison at cph.org. It costs only $10.99 to download. This new audiobook is a must-listen for Issues Etc. fans. Christ Have Mercy by Pastor Matt Harrison, cph.org.